We're in the mountains in Europe, where there are forests and meadows, and a 27-kilometre tunnel that scientists shoot lasers in. It's CERN, and it costs billions to build, and it's just about to be brought to a halt by a bird with a baguette. I'm Dr. Anne Jones, and in my new series for What the Duck, I'm taking on nature's most wanted, the animals that end up on the wrong side of the law. Find What the Duck on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
After 5 days of deliberations, the 12 people deciding whether Joseph Ocone and Steve Fabrizi are guilty of murdering Irma Palasik have returned their verdict. I'm Stephen Stockwell. This is episode 11 of The Case of the Two Intruders.
Irma Palasik's brutal murder rocked her family and has haunted them for 24 long years.
This wasn't the average robbery.
The brutality of the attack shocked the community.
They were virtually tortured that night.
Violently assaulted before the two men ransacked the premises and stole cash and jewellery.
My grandparents were beaten and my grandmother was left to die on the lounge room floor.
For a quarter of a century, the family of Irma Palasik have been waiting for answers after she was murdered during a brutal home invasion, tied up and beaten, her house torn apart in a search for money. We have taken you inside the trial of the two men accused of this murder, and now we have a verdict. In this room, as it happened and as it was handed down, was ABC court reporter Elizabeth Byrne. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Stocky.
And we also have investigative reporter James Viver. G'day, James.
Hi, Stocky.
Liz, the jury has reached a verdict. We've been waiting 2 months for this. How did you get the news that this decision had been made?
Well, essentially, I got an email from the court saying the court will reconvene shortly. James and I had actually retired to a nearby cafe to discuss something that had happened earlier in the day, which was the judge answering a jury question. So I wasn't surprised, really, when we were called back to the court. And when we got there, I could tell it must be a verdict, partly because a whole lot of other lawyers had come into the court and other people from around the court precinct who would only come and sit down for a verdict. They wouldn't be worried about a question.
Yeah. James, what was the mood like as, you know, the various parties, the families, the defendants filtered into the courtroom?
Yeah, it definitely felt different to the other times we've been called in. It's quite hard to put your finger on, really. But as Liz says, I noticed too the fresh faces that I hadn't seen at any point in the preceding 2 months. There was a lot of tension. It almost goes without saying, but you could really feel it in the room. The family came in relatively late. A lot of the rest of us were in there assembled. They sort of all sat on a couple of rows together, holding hands extremely tightly, super focused, and just waiting those few more moments after that quarter century, as you said, to find out what had happened.
When the jury came in, where did they look?
Well, it's more about this particular jury, how they looked. They looked resolved, and there's been these several ladies sitting in the front row for almost the entire trial, and I've been trying to gauge what they're thinking. But they looked like they were, I wouldn't say happy with their result, but resolved in their result. And I didn't notice them particularly looking at Mr. Fabrizi, but they look like, we've got the decision, let's get on with the business.
Yeah, I'm always a little bit interested and curious where a jury looks as they come in, because there is a theory that if they look at the defendant as they walk in, they may have a not guilty verdict, and if they don't look at the defendant, they may have a guilty verdict. So I always like to ask that question. Liz, what verdict did they deliver?
Well, the judge asked the jury foreman to come forward, and the judge's associate actually read the charges to the jury, asked, first of all, have you reached your verdicts? And the foreperson said yes, and then read each of the charges. And The first charge was a charge of murder against Steve Fabrizi, and the answer was not guilty. And then it was a charge of manslaughter against Steve Fabrizi, and the answer was guilty. So from that, we knew what else was probably coming. So Joseph Facchione also guilty of manslaughter. And then, of course, the raft of other charges. In addition to that, Joseph Facchione was found guilty of two charges related to the 1998 incident at Irma Palasik's former home in Canberra. And that included an assault on Irma Palasik. So there were quite a few guilty findings, but a lot of those alternative charges they didn't even go into. Mm-hmm. They were found guilty of everything.
Yep. James, what was the reaction in the courtroom as, you know, it was announced that Steve Fabrizi and Joseph Facchione guilty of the manslaughter of Irma Palasik?
There was a moment when John Makita, who has been the figurehead of the Who Killed Irma campaign, the grandson of Irma, when he must have been holding his breath when everything started as Liz described. And when they said guilty to manslaughter, I just heard this massive exhalation of breath that felt like it had been in there for the last 26 years. Not biologically possible, but that's how it felt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was sat there with his wife and his two daughters, and they were just sort of, as I said before, holding hands so tightly that their knuckles had gone white. They had tears in their eyes. You know, John looked down, and it was just a palpable moment of emotion that thankfully most people never get to feel, really, because it is such a mixture of probably all the emotions any human being could possibly feel, you know, and in the row behind them. And it's worth pointing out to people who might not be able to picture the courtroom, when we say the public gallery, that kind of makes it feel like it's high up and you're looking down. It really isn't. You're on the same level, really pretty close to what's going on in the public gallery, and we are close to them in the various times. You know, things like you go to a place for ages, you end up sitting in the same spot. You're close enough, you can reach out and touch the family. You talk to them every day, and, you know, you get to know them just a little bit. And there were two rows of the family there, sisters and brothers and relatives and, you know, and so on. You know, there was a moment I'm frantically taking notes, and I just sort of am trying to look over and observe what they're doing while sort of being respectful. There was a moment when I'm not sure how she fits into the family, but she was sitting on one end and she just sort of turned and looked at me with tears in her eyes, and we just had a slight nod at one another and then sort of carried on. So sadly, the timing just wasn't quite right for Elizabeth Makita and her husband, John Sr., to make it into the court to physically hear the verdict come from the lips of the foreman of the jury. Obviously, they'd been messaging. By the time they arrived, they knew. And if there was a moment that just summed up everything that we're talking about over all of this time, it was just a long, long, tearful embrace between John Makita Jr., grandson of Irma, and his mother, Elizabeth. They just hugged and hugged and hugged and hugged and hugged. And it was really moving, I have to say. It really was.
And James, what about reactions from the defendants as the verdict was handed down?
I must say the thing that I noticed was at first Steve Fabrizi's expression was pretty blank. It then changed, and people won't have seen this, but Liz and I have, it changed to a similar expression during the recording of his police interview after he'd been arrested and was sat there with lead investigator Craig Marriott, that sort of quite shocked, looking down. As you might expect, his face continued to darken. I thought he was on the verge of tears at one point. Hard to know when you don't know someone personally, but, you know, as I mentioned, we sit quite close to really everything in that particular courtroom. And so that was the thing that stuck with me, perhaps, as the reality of what had happened sunk in those first few seconds in the rest of his life.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm wondering, you know, with this verdict, you know, Steve Fabrizi and Joseph Facchione were on trial for murder the option of manslaughter was given to the jury. Do we know why they ended up at that decision of manslaughter and not murder?
Well, they can never tell us because they'd be breaking the law. But manslaughter is the statutory alternative to murder, and it was an option given to them. It has obviously a lesser penalty, but that's all we can tell you about that, really. But as I said to you before, they seem fairly resolved on that result.
Mm. How does the family feel about that result, you know, it being manslaughter and not murder?
Well, I wondered that question myself, but they said they'd had this question for 26 years, who killed Irma? And John said to me later, well, now we know. And outside, he was really quite passionate about what had happened.
It's 26 long years. 26 years that we've waited for justice for Irma and Gregor. Our family is today overwhelmed with relief and gratitude as those responsible have now been held accountable. Irma and Gregor did not deserve what was done to them on that horrific night in November 1999, a bashing so brutal and with such devastating consequences. Irma was so much more than a victim. She was our mum, our grandmother, our sister, and our friend. And Gregor was a gentle, loving husband and a grandfather who cared deeply for his family, for our family. But he was forever altered after beloved Irma's death. Nothing will ever bring Irma back or undo the pain of that night. But our family can today rest knowing that we now know who killed Irma.
And Elizabeth also, she wasn't sure if she was going to speak, and then she mustered up the courage to do so. And I'm so glad that she did, because I have to say, you know, in covering this, and we can't talk about it while the jury's there, but now that we have a verdict, we can, of course, in covering this trial over the last few weeks, what I have been wondering about is just how they've had the resilience to live with what happened to their parents, and specifically Elizabeth and her mother, and to sort of think in the darker moments in the middle of the night how she must have thought about what happened and what might have gone through her mother's thoughts in her final moments, and just the shock of it all. And it was really again quite moving to hear her describe exactly the way in which she has lived with the mental imagery, let alone the pain of it all over these last 26 years.
It's been extremely hard. I try to put it in the back of my head constantly, but I keep seeing Mum getting bashed and her feelings of terror, hurt, confusion. I can't get it out of my head. I don't think I ever will get that out of my head. And I'm not upset about the that it was manslaughter, because I don't think they'll outlive their life.
That's Elizabeth Makita, Irma Palasik's daughter. And before that, you heard John Makita, Irma Palasik's grandson, Elizabeth Makita's son, the man who has run the Who Killed Irma campaign for decades at this point. You know, James, you've spent time with the family of the last week waiting for this verdict. You know, you talk about their resolve. What's it been like sitting with them over those last few days?
Hard to say, really. You know, as a journalist, you know, you have to try and calibrate in any given situation where the line is in terms of doing your job and being respectful. It's quite a hard one to figure out, to be quite honest with you. And I've been doing this a long time, not as long as Liz. She's the doyen of court reporting. But, you know, I've been in this trade, if you like, for a long time. I found this quite a hard one to work out. I have to say, they're so nice. They were so friendly. And we're always up for a chat and a joke and to have a bit of banter. And, you know, even in the press conference, if we may just take a small bouquet on ourselves, thanked the press for all of the coverage of Who Killed Irma as a, you know, TM as a campaign over the years. And so in a bit of a similar way to the police, obviously much less, of course, they were cognizant of it being a group effort, as it were, to sort of get to this particular moment. Now, we're just a tiny little cog, of course, in all of this. But insofar as spending time with them, it is, look, it's heavy going, and you get the sense of they're just carrying around this big weight of emotion on their backs for all of this time. And now hopefully they're able to just put some of that weight down. Although, as you just heard from Elizabeth, it's easier said than done. There is, as John Makita, I thought quite cheerfully put it, the departures lounge area outside the court, which is, once he described it like that, I couldn't unsee it. This is essentially some quite, uncomfortable chairs that everyone sort of sits on in between proceedings. And they've all sort of gathered in that spot and chatted away, and various levels and generations of the family have been there. And obviously it's school holidays at the minute. So, the great granddaughters of Irma have been there. And that sort of felt quite nice too, that they were in the court and could see the result of this thing that happened even before they were born.
Yeah. While there was a wait for the verdict, a number of days as well, 5 days the jury was deliberating for, before they reached the guilty verdict on a manslaughter charge for Joseph Acone and Steve Fabrizi. The jury was working quite hard. They were deliberating through that period. And, we had questions from them to the judge throughout that as well. One of them asking how extended joint commission works. Now, this is the concept that if two people go to commit a crime, burglary, for example, they're both responsible if it escalates to something like murder. Liz, does a question like that suggest that the jury may have had a kind of a harder time reaching this verdict?
If they were having a harder time, they'd have sat for 6 weeks. I think it showed, which has happened to me, but I think what it showed is that they were a smart jury. This was a very sophisticated question. And what they asked the judge was, did this extended joint commission idea, where something outside what was obviously the original agreement to burgle the house had happened, and that was, of course, the death of Mrs. Palasik. So they wanted to know, did extended joint commission apply to all of the charges or just the murder charge? And the answer to that was just the murder charge. Then they came back a day later and they were asking about does it apply to both of the people involved? And so they asked, the judge had to explain to them that it doesn't matter who had attacked Mrs. Palasik, both of them were equally liable.
Yeah, and it seemed quite soon after that question was answered that the jury returned with a verdict.
Yes, and I think that, you don't know how they were thinking, because they can't tell us, obviously. Mm. But I thought at the time when that question was answered this morning, they'll either be back in an hour or it'll be another week. Mm. So I was right about the back in an hour.
Yeah. Pleased it was the former, mostly for the family, saved them having another a week of waiting in that departures lounge, James, as you've described it. With Joseph Acone and Steve Fabrizi being found guilty of manslaughter in the trial of, whether or not they've murdered Irma Palasik, there was so much evidence that we've heard over the last 2 months, the DNA found on items in the fridge of the Palasik home that prosecution said had a really high likelihood of being from Joseph Acone and Steve Fabrizi, obviously being a key part, then challenges from the defence about, how much you could trust that evidence as well. The defence also highlighting potential other people that could have been involved too. I mean, what struck both of you as the kind of the key evidence that, the jury may have relied on as they worked their way to this decision?
I thought throughout it was very hard to get past the fridge. Hmm. That DNA evidence was very compelling, regardless of the other, if there might have been contamination of other things or, small mistakes made or some, other mistakes. But it was very hard to get past that, because the key question the jury had to answer to before it began to think about whether they'd done it was putting them both in the house. And if they accepted that evidence, it put them both in the house.
As Travis Jackson said, critically of the investigation, it was DNA or bust. And so it proved to be, just not in the way perhaps that he suggested. I agree with Liz. I mean, no DNA, no case, ultimately. You know, no undercover operation, no Joseph Ficconi ever really being known. But insofar as coming to the decision that they have, yeah, exactly that. You can't get past the fridge.
Yeah.
And of course, the fridge was the DNA on the milk bottle from Steve Fabrizi and the DNA on the water jug from Joseph Ficconi.
Which matched the balaclava, which is how we got convicted of the incident in 1998. Just to close the loop for everyone following along.
It's been, incredible kind of work from the police to get to these points, to connect those items. Also from Gregor Palasik as well, you know, to have the presence of mind lying in the hospital bed after being assaulted during this home invasion to mention to someone that I think I saw someone drink from something in the fridge as I was lying on the ground. And that being the thing that brings us to the moment that we're at now as well. You know, Liz, James, you've talked us through the verdicts, the reactions from the family. What happened in the courtroom after the verdict was delivered? Was there any sort of further legal discussion, any planning that's happening for the next stages in those moments?
Well, there are a couple more things to come, and we can't discuss some of that just yet. But, you know, the judge does what the judges always have to do. In a case where someone's found guilty, they set up a pre-sentence report for both men. They also set a date for the next set of directions. Sky Jerome, who had represented Steve Fabrizi, stood up and said that she'd been instructed to offer to the court restorative justice. Now, restorative justice in the ACT is a program which brings perpetrators together with victims so that there is an exchange there. So, and it gives perpetrators an opportunity to apologize and victims an opportunity to talk to a perpetrator. In this case, however, it's not going to happen. Before Sky Jerome could even sit down, the prosecutor was on his feet saying the family doesn't accept that. So it's out of the question, but it was an interesting little development.
The other thing that I noticed, I just hadn't really thought about, to be honest, is what happens to the jury after they've given their verdict. And the judge said, well, listen, you can go, or you can go and sit in the public gallery and watch what goes on if you like, or you can stay sitting there while we sort of tidy things up. All of them left. I think they were ready to, well, clearly they were ready to go. You know, on a human level, it must be quite awkward sitting there, you know, with the defendants, the accused and the family and all of that. And as the judge said, as Justice Mossop said, you know, it is a burden on, you know, with the greatest respect, lay people. And he marked on the service that they had carried out and thanked them for it and all of those things. So, but off they went, and fair enough too.
Yeah. Liz, what happens now? Do we work towards sentencing? How does the process from here work?
Yes, we will work towards sentencing. So, of course, there's the pre-sentence report. There'll be a bit of time before that gets or comes to fruition. There's also the question of appeals. Now, there's 28 days from conviction to the deadline for an appeal. You can apply out of time, but usually there's a decision about whether there'll be an appeal within that period. I'm not sure what will happen there, but Travis Jackson already raised that period in the court, so we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. Do we have any idea on what potential sentence these men may be facing?
Well, it's very hard to tell, particularly since there are so many charges that they've been found guilty of. But the maximum term for manslaughter is 20 years in the ACT.
Thank you, Liz. And these men at the moment in their early 70s. So a sentence, you know, of that length would put them into their 90s, not considering sentences for the other offences that they've been convicted of today as well. If you've got any questions about this, I'm sure people do, please send us an email. Get in touch, thecaseofitabc.net.au. We do love hearing from you. We will, in fact, be back early next week with an episode where we start answering the questions that we couldn't answer during the trial, talking about some of the things that the jury didn't hear as well. And Liz, there's a couple of pretty big things that we can start to reveal in that episode.
Yes, hopefully.
It's some things that I'm very keen to share as well when we start getting to what we really think about the trial, and offer some of our analysis and insights into the process throughout as well in some of our other episodes we've got coming up. And there has also been one question that we have been asked so much throughout this trial. I think probably one in every two emails to the case of has asked this question. So given that weight of inquiry, we've decided we'll do a special episode on that as well. So you'll find out more about that if you grab yourself ABC Listen. All the details will be dropping in there. Our latest episodes pop up there slightly before they pop up anywhere else. So grab yourself ABC Listen. And if you've enjoyed this series of the case of, jump onto whatever podcast app you listen to us through and leave us a rating and a review, because it makes it much easier for people to find us. Elizabeth, James, thank you so much for joining us for this series, for taking us inside the courtroom and talking us through the verdict in this episode.
Thank you, Stocky.
No, you're welcome.
The Case of the Two Intruders is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. It's reported by Elizabeth Byrne and James Viver and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. This episode was produced on the land of the Ngunnawal, Ngambri and Wurundjeri people.